This is the Plant Yourself Podcast. I'm Howard Jacobson of plantyourself.com and wellstarthealth.com. This podcast is part of my mission to help you live a nimble and natural life. Hi, this week is the return of Josh Lajani. Gosh, this is his fourth or fifth appearance on the podcast. As many of you know, he's my business partner at WellStart Health and a really good friend and mentor. He was up in North Carolina. We were in my little shed studio recording a whole bunch of videos for WellStart Health. And we took a break, sat down, turned the camera and the microphone on us and had a conversation. And the conversation was about nature. Josh grew up in nature in the bayou of South Louisiana. He was a hunter, a fisher, and in order to do those things well, he had to be very attuned to the cycles of nature, to the clues that nature leaves all around, and to the various ways that human beings are integrated into nature and separate from it, and how we navigate that dance to stay alive and to find meaning and joy and purpose in our lives. We talked about both sides of nature, the lovely, beautiful side, as we were looking out the window of my office onto a gorgeous magnolia tree, onto a blackberry patch, a raspberry patch, to the frogs and the rabbits all around us, and also to nature's harsh, ugly, uncomfortable side, dangerous side, and how we can't have one without the other, and the relationship of our lifestyle to this dance with nature, to the ultra running, the long hours and days in nature in which you don't get to choose whether the weather is beautiful, calm, friendly, or ugly, tempestuous, and threatening. And what this does for the human animal, and what this does for our happiness and our health and our society, to be connected with nature or to be illusorily, but still separate from it. Three quick announcements before we get to the conversation. Number one, WellStart Health is starting new cohorts every couple of weeks now. If you are ready to turn your life around to embrace a plant-based lifestyle and get coaching and support on all the aspects of lifestyle medicine, from sleep to stress to movement to social engagement to the nature fix to plant-based living, check it out. WellStartHealth.com/program. Second thing, we're going to be starting up a new coach training in September. If you would like to become a health coach, or you're already a health coach and are a little bit frustrated that the tools you learned in coach training are not allowing you to get predictable, big results with clients, then I'd invite you to join us at WellStartCoach.com. Read all about it, and you can sign up for an enrollment interview. We're going to be starting our biggest and best cohort yet in mid-September 2019. And finally, I'm thrilled to announce that as of this morning, Josh's mother and brother, Ramona and Dustin Lajani's cookbook, Pure Ambrosia, Lajani Family Traditions Recreated for Health and Longevity, is available as a paperback on Amazon. Just search for the title Pure Ambrosia and you'll be able to find it and buy the book so that you can have it in your kitchen and recreate the down-home dishes of Mississippi and Louisiana as expertly recreated these classic Southern recipes for longevity, for health. They did not have a roadmap for how to do this. It took years of experimentation to get the roux right, to get the gumbo right, to get the jambalaya right, the fish sticks, so that they are not only whole food plant-based compliant, but also really delicious and authentic. So whether it's for you and your nostalgia or to help other people start to make this transition without feeling like they have to give up on their culture, check out Pure Ambrosia, the paperback. And also, let's see if we can get them some reviews, give them some Amazon love. All right, so it's time for the interview with Josh Lajani. And remember, this was recorded on video as well. And if you'd like to watch it, you can check us out on YouTube, which you can find. You can find the YouTube link at plantyourself.com/328, which is the home of this interview on the internet. All right, so without further ado, here's the conversation between me and Josh Lajani, all about nature. Hey, well, welcome to North Carolina, man.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah. So we've been here. We've recorded 20 Wellstart videos.
We sure did. Pat on my back.
Yeah,
you did. Yours too.
You did great. I just pushed buttons. You're the talent today. But it's funny. Like we got, we've talked about a lot of different themes and sort of like priming the pump. Like it's different from you being at home and having an idea and wanting to talk about something.
Right, so,
okay,
right,
let's,
exactly.
Let's put 20 in a row.
Right, it's trickier. But luckily, I'm passionate about all of these things that we're talking about. So there's a lot to be said, whether it feels forced or it's off the cuff. I'm always passionate about it.
Yeah, but what's interesting, though, is like when we do 20...
Yeah,
you sort of run out of the things you think about, and so like it's almost like deeper stuff.
Yeah, that's true. It has been like really cool things, right?
And so one of the things that's sort of coming up was like our relationship to nature.
Yeah,
I just scratched my giant arm, so I have a relationship with nature because I got stung by a wasp 2 days ago, and this thing looks like a bloated sausage.
Oh, you got a Shrek elbow.
But we're like here in the and surrounded by woods, you were commenting on the magnolia tree.
Sure, yeah. And like nature itself, I'm just looking around and you feel there's clovers and weeds and things that are dead and tall grasses and trees. Like nature's so complex and infinite and interesting and unforgiving, It's just really cool to be in nature because for me, whether you're talking about a mountain vista or being out in the middle of the Gulf of Mexico, anything that makes you feel, it may sound counterintuitive, but anything that makes you feel so infinitesimal, I think is very humbling and therefore very useful to you in your growth process. Like to understand, you must be humbled to surrender to nature's will. And to understand how powerful nature is, it helps to be overwhelmed by her regularly.
Well, and I'm struck by like how weird this conversation would have been for most of human history.
Right?
Right, like you have to surrender to the sun going up in the morning and coming down at night.
And, right, yeah. And the fact that you're biologically predisposed to eating largely a plant-based diet,
Right, that the idea that, like it'd be like talking to the fish about, you really should pay more attention to the ocean, and the grandeur of the ocean. That's all there is.
Right. Exactly.
Is this grandeur. But we've created a society in which I think it's an illusion,
right?
But illusorily, we are outside of nature.
Yeah, totally. That's our fatal flaw, I think. We don't see ourselves as part of this beautiful ebb and flow of happy and sad and pleasure and pain and all of these things that are part of nature. We want only the good stuff. We want to get rid of the antimicrobes. We want to get rid of, all of the inflammation and pain that we feel. We want to get rid of all of the unnecessary walking. We want to get rid of all of these things, that make us part of nature instead of embracing the complexity of nature through embracing the complexity of our bodies.
Yeah. I mean, guilty. Like, mm-hmm. We have a garden. We just finished putting a fence around the garden.
Right.
So we definitely want to keep some bad stuff out of the garden.
Sure.
We weed the beds, right? So we want to keep the good plants that are going to feed us delicious stuff and want to get rid of the other stuff.
Sure.
Is, useless to us. I, you know, after that wasp stung me, I went and found his little nest and I knocked it off the beam. Like, what's, you know, like every creature wants to, you know, be in a benevolent environment. What's the difference between, you know, the pursuit of well-being and this step crossing a line too far to, like, separate ourselves?
Yeah, that's a really awesome question. I don't know. It's that's very complex, you know, because it's a dance. Like what we talk about with injury all the time when we talk about people getting started with movement. Like, you know, I could argue that your situation out here is very, although it seems controlled and you have the thing, the fence and everything, it's very organic, and a lot of surrender has gone into this. We were talking about the bees earlier, you know. We were talking about the deer. Yes, you put up a fence, but what if it doesn't work? What if rabbits still get in? This is just a thing that you're trying. You're still surrendering to the power of nature. You're trying to mitigate as much as you can, but you're not really wishing to make her irrelevant. Does that make sense? Like, we often do that, I feel like, at the doctor's offices. We're really trying to make Mother Nature irrelevant by being so specific and black and white about what we tell people is wrong with them and what they need to do to get better. Take this, schedule this, this procedure, we'll remove that, we'll cauterize that, we'll poison that with chemicals, we'll cut that off. All of these things. And that's not what I feel like you have going on here. It's almost like a step with, not a step without. Step with, moving in step with Mother Nature, instead of trying to eschew everything she's trying to point out to you.
And, you know, in the same way, you could say that all those elements of medicine have their place. Right, like if I needed one of those treatments, yeah, you know, like, you know, bring it on. No, I'm not so at one with nature that I don't want, to kill the bacterium that's going to kill me or something.
That's exactly right.
But I guess what you're saying is that it's trying to make nature irrelevant by removing our responsibility to live according to nature. Like, we can break all of nature's rules about how to eat, how to move, how to be on this planet, because we have this anti-nature technology that can mitigate all of the natural consequences.
Yes, that's exactly right. We can move, we can do everything it takes to kill this organism and stay alive because of some inventions that we have as human beings. If it'd be up to nature, we'd be dead. A ton of us would be. Think about how cholesterol medicine allows a person to eat, or how insulin allows a person to eat, right? Think about all of these inputs that allow us to stay alive when nature is trying to put us down because we're doing it wrong. And that speaks to me. That speaks to me. Yes, we need help, and these technologies are wonderful in acute scenarios and situations. But I think trying to get ahead of the curve and that better safe than sorry mentality, and when it comes to intervening into this system of systems, I think we do it too much, way too much. And the trick is, it's a very profitable thing to do, to be safer than sorry, to stay ahead of the curve, to get your screening and make sure we get things caught early, all of these things. Yeah.
Well, it's better safe than sorry is like, we don't trust nature, right? So we have to override it. Right. And you know, you grow up in the country, very much immersed in nature, in its sounds and smells and tastes and feels.
Right.
I grew up in the suburbs, and it's taken me a while to be, you know, out here and feel comfortable and go camping and things. But, you know, when we look at our culture, we want to be 72 degrees Fahrenheit, you know, 38% relative humidity all the time. If we, you know, if you accidentally bump into someone at the airport or something, there's, you know, someone's going
to
flinch.
I don't want to experience the first tinge of hunger ever, right?
Yeah, because, you know, I guess we don't trust how nature makes us feel. But as we walked back, you like looked at, you went and got your phone to take a picture of the magnolia flower, and you're like, this is amazing.
It is. It is phenomenal when you allow yourself. It's like we've been drawing trees with crayons on construction paper since we were kids, but that's not a tree. It still doesn't make it a tree. The tree itself is uncopyable. We don't know how to do trees. We don't know how to do that, you know? And I would argue that it may be proving, in large part, that we don't know how to grow human health either. We got to let nature do that. We just provide her with what she needs, you know? We can make temporary outcomes do certain things, just like we can cut a limb here, we can prune a blossom here and manipulate that tree to do what we want. We can do the same thing with the human body, I think. But when it comes to creating that thing, we have been created and we are stewards of that wonderful creation. You know, we're not creating anything ourselves.
Right. And you know, when you talk about the way we're separating ourselves from nature, I'm thinking about, you know, 2 weeks ago I released a podcast with Philip Shepherd, who wrote Radical Wholeness, and this idea of, like, and he talks about a tree, and because we all think of ourselves as sort of individual, unique, you know, entities, and it's just like, think of a tree. Where does the tree end? The roots go down into the ground, they draw moisture and nutrients, minerals from the soil. When do those become part of the tree? When are they not? The tree respires, it puts out oxygen, it takes in. And it's like, when you look at the tree, it's only the limited human attention span that makes it look like a thing as opposed to a process.
Right, yes.
And I've been thinking a lot
that
about,
beautiful.
Like, what if I'm a process?
Yeah.
And, you know, and when you freeze frame me, I look like a guy. But really, like, everything, every cell in my body is going to be somewhere else.
Yes.
The oxygen I breathe in today came from somewhere. Someone else is going to breathe it some other time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, my piss and shit is going to grow things.
It's going to stay here. All the elements that make us up aren't going anywhere.
Yeah. You know, thinking of myself as a process, like, I don't know exactly how to explain it, but there's something about, like, when a process goes awry, lots of things can go wrong. Like, it feels like there's more at stake to get the process right.
Right. There's, like, it would be like in a pond, like, if you saw these concentric rings on a pond, and you're like, wow, I wonder how they got each one of those rings like that. You know, that's how we think, instead of just dropping a pebble in there and realize that one simple act created this wonderful pattern that you're admiring. But you're thinking about it wrong. You're wondering how to create all those circles and all of those waves. You don't realize that it's just that will do it, right? And I feel like that's where we are a lot of times. We want to recreate that idea without really understanding where it all starts, where it's, you know, what seeds it, that very simple touch of Mother Nature.
What that reminds me of is there's a lot of nature that's sort of fractal.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's got these patterns, and you know, you can think of it like pine cones or like that Romanesco cauliflower with swirls.
Yeah.
And we look at that, and we're hardwired to appreciate the beauty.
Yeah.
And we are trying to, you know, as art, human artists, we're trying to recreate beauty. And I read that, like, you know, Jackson Pollock, his paintings are like fractal. Like when you analyze them scientifically, they're kind of the same ratios and patterns as nature. And we know, like, he did it not by, like, pointillistically putting it everything. He just threw buckets of paint at canvases and, like, rolled around on it.
Right.
Like that's, you know, and people look at his stuff and go, like, a kid could do that. Anyone, you know.
Yeah.
But, like, what I see in his work is a surrendering to natural processes rather than the need to control every drop of paint.
Yes. Yes. A healthy lifestyle is art. You know? It's art. It's not algebra. Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's hard for people who are really good at algebra to surrender their box-checking prowess and become an artist. You know, it's very difficult. It doesn't mean it's impossible, but that is a thing that I've noticed over and over, is people who cling to the A, or the idea of doing it quote unquote right, have trouble surrendering enough to become a rough around the edges artist who can create art with their life.
Yeah, and I feel this when I do martial arts, because the martial art that I do is all about you know, surrender to ease.
Right.
Right? So if my reaction to a threat is to brace. And that's, you know, it does a whole bunch of things. At first, it diminishes my range of motion. It diminishes my freedom. It also tells you exactly where I am. You can sense, you know, every single motion, as opposed to a more fluid state.
Right.
But why do we hold on to this when it's only going to get us into trouble? Because it's what we know.
Yeah.
You know, so if I'm separate from my own natural movement, I don't trust it. The same way as we're separate from nature and we don't trust it, because we're, you know, it's like trying to push down on an imaginary gas pedal. You just don't believe it's there.
So right.
I don't think it's going to take you anywhere.
Right. Right. It's, yeah, it's very, I don't know, it's just, it's a lot of moving parts and pieces, just like in nature. It's just a lot going on. There's, and then, you know, there's the mindset, there's this desire to spill it all out on the table and look at it and put it all in its place where it's supposed to go. And then there's people like myself who just go, leave it just like that. Can't we appreciate the beauty of how it fell? Look at it. Wow, that's nice. And now look at all the time we have to appreciate other beautiful things. You know? So yes, I have weighed 420 pounds at one time in my life. And yes, I have hurt myself running as part of moving out of that style of living. And yes, now I have extra skin and stretch marks and all of that stuff. But rather than me obsess granularly over how to correct all of that, wouldn't it serve me better to spend a lot more energy appreciating the beauty of what it is in its current state? That is a lot more difficult, no doubt, but I think it's also a lot easier to be happy when you do that. You know, if you think about, like, I'm drawing a blank. I had a quote on my head that I wanted to, that I was reminded of, but I forgot.
Yeah. It'll come back if it wants
to. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like, you know, sort of trusting. I lost what I was going to say too.
Yeah. Everybody forget what they're gonna say.
Yeah. Do you guys remember where we were going? Well, so let's apply this to health and lifestyle. So how does, you know, this is all like, you know, flowery words about nature. What does it what does it mean day to day?
Get simpler to me. That's what it means. Be a lot simpler. Nature, while complex in an infinite universe of systems, it's still very fractal. It's still very simple in its most basic component parts. It's doing some very simple things over and over and over again until infinity. And I think that we do the exact opposite of that in our chosen styles of living. And so an example of that might be for me, like, so people, you know, you tell them a plant-based diet, or you say eat healthier and cut out meat or dairy or whatever. You tell them that carbs aren't evil. And you tell them it's okay to eat potatoes. And so the average person goes, oh, potatoes, okay. So French fries are okay. Potato chips, okay. What about potatoes au gratin? Well, you see how silly these questions can be when, if we think simpler, we think more in line. We just see the potato. We don't see all the adulterations that man has created of the potato. And it's a lot less complicated when we're not confused by a potato. Right? Because we understand the beauty of that a potato is magic food. It's magic. You cut that up. And it grows more potatoes. Right? So who cares why? Who cares how? Who cares about all of that? That's our food. We eat magic food. You know?
I remember when we decided we were going to plant potatoes. And I realized I had no idea how you grow potatoes. And we went to get the seed stock from the farm store. And it was like, but this is a bag of potatoes.
Yeah.
You made a mistake. You didn't sell me the seeds.
No, I want to grow potatoes, sir. No, potatoes are magic, Jack. Here's your magic beans, buddy.
Yeah, then we just had a giant lunch of the zucchini, the summer squash.
Right, we were talking about that, right?
Yeah. Right, like, talk about that.
All simple, one seed from one grows a squash plant that will literally reproduce thousands upon thousands of seeds from all of the different squash it's gonna make. That's amazing to me. I don't know how it works. I don't need to dig down into that. I need to go, thank you, nature. This is beautiful. And just like Mia has done, I would love to learn how to manipulate that plant to help it have set the table for it to make the most squash possible for me. You know, I understand that part. Yes, of course. But when it comes to what's in that seed, and let's make one of those seeds that unfolds into a squash plant that makes... We have to surrender to the fact that even though we've been to the moon and we about to have flying cars and we have the internet and all of that stuff, we don't know the first thing about creating a seed that will turn into a plant. That's magic. And it's okay to surrender to magic and let it be what it is. Put that magic in your body.
Yeah.
And move on with your life. Go for a run. Read a book.
Yeah. And the other thing that brings up for me is like the difference between the way Mia gardens and, you know, there's plenty of companies
sure
that are growing squash in ways that I would consider unsustainable. Mm-hmm. And it's because they're focusing on the thing, not the process.
Correct.
Like for us, the process, you know, the thing we're going for is a vibrant soil ecosystem.
Yeah.
As opposed to the squash, like the squash.
As opposed to squash per acre. Right.
Yeah, as opposed to the squash itself. It's like we're mm-hmm. growing soil. We're trying to grow earthworms.
Sure.
And if we grow earthworms, then everything else comes.
The growth medium is what's most important.
Right. So we're trying to throw the pebble.
Sure.
Instead of trying to
recreate
mold the concentric circles.
Right. That's, yeah, exactly.
So how do we do this in our health, in our lives?
By doing some very difficult, simple things, you know? Eating a lot simpler. Eating a hell of a lot simpler. Thinking about behaving like animals in the wild behave. They're not, you know... They're not meal planning. They're not prepping. They're eating they're eating their biologically appropriate diet. The difference between us and animals is our path of least resistance in the food world will bring us to heart disease and diabetes and obesity. So we have to do the exact opposite. We have to go against what the path of least resistance is. Trust me, if the squirrels had a whole pile of bird seed to eat instead of nuts, that's what they're going to do. That has nothing to do with nature, though. That pile of bird seed wasn't put there by nature. So it's about being able to, even though we have the availability of these things, we call ourselves the smartest animals on the planet. It's about having the ability to recognize the bird seed and opt for the nuts that we have to crawl up and down trees to collect anyway. Does that make sense at all? Like, so we have to consciously, even though the animal inside of us, the squirrel inside of us, that's really drawn to the path of least resistance for all of its morsels of food, even though that animal is drawn to Taco Bell or Burger King because it's easiest, that animal is going to thrive off of the life it would have had to live if that wasn't available. Just like the squirrels and the rabbits and the deers and the birds thrive. So for me, I'm trying to bring wildness into my body by eating plants. And that's very simple. That's not, well, what's the recipe for that? Right? Potatoes. Eat a potato. Eat some rice. Eat some beans. These very simple one-ingredient meals.
And I, you know, coming back to this idea of process rather than entity. Mm-hmm. So that if we see the squirrel as an entity, and then you know, and we give it this weird diet, then it's going to get sick and obese and do sure. All the things we do. But if you see the squirrel as part of its ecosystem, as the squirrel node of the process of nature,
yeah.
Then if it's in right relation with the right other nodes, then it follows its internal rules, path of least resistance, caloric density, eat it, bury it, find it later.
Sure.
Those rules work if it's in right relationship with other processes.
That's yes, exactly. And if you don't, like, another fun thought experiment that I've done when I think of myself as an animal is I think of myself in a zoo. If I was in a zoo, regardless of what's available to the human animal to eat, if I was in a zoo, what would that zoologist in charge of me feed me? And so that's always been a fun one for me to think about in my head, is like, if a, you know, unbiased third party who knew the human knew human biology and was put in charge of feeding this human food to keep it in peak physical condition so people don't come look at it and go, oh my God, what's wrong with their human? It's so gross. You know? What would he feed that human? And that's, you know, I'll have trouble imagining that he's going to be taking the steaks from the lion and throwing it in the human enclosure.
Right. Well, and if you think about it that way, I have trouble thinking that he's going to actually deliver the food to the human. If you want them to be in peak physical shape, you give them a habitat
where they
have to go expend the calories to get mm-hmm. the food.
Or just like they do in the primate habitats, is they go plant food places, you know, but it's not Skittles and hamburgers they plant in the primate habitats. They put in bananas and so the orangutans have to climb up the pole to go get them or whatever. It's to try to mimic that mimicry. We can do that. We can be our own zoologists. And we can feed ourselves. We can be the human in our own human habitat. And we can live that thought experiment out. I do it all the time. I often think of myself as that, you know, that animal. It's useful.
The other thing I want to talk about around nature is the sport you've chosen. That's a terrible word for what you do, which is long runs.
Right.
Puts you in nature.
It does.
And it puts you in nature, not in like 2 hour intervals where we can get the ideal light and heat and humidity and terrain. Right, like so. My sport is ultimate frisbee. So I will go if it's raining. They won't play because we don't want us to dig up the field.
Right.
If it's we set the game so it's not going to be too hot. We do it during the day when the sun is And we're on grass that's been fascistically cut so that every one of them is a little stormtrooper at the exact same height. Right, but your relationship with nature as an ultra runner, and mine. Is far more at its mercy, and I'm wondering if that's like what that does to you, for you.
Yeah, well, it does that not only spatially and visually, like depending on a different geographic location where you're in this physical space of nature and you're dealing with the elements, you're dealing with the cold or the heat or the rain or the mountains or the muddy wood trails. But also, because of the time spent out there, you're dealing with nature in a whole different way. You're dealing with what nature provides to most animals that we hardly ever experience, which is scarcity. Like inside of our bodies, we're experiencing severe caloric scarcity. We cannot, no matter how many gels we take, keep up. And so that experience inside of my body, those feelings, those sensations of exhaustion and taking the next step anyway, that's a whole different part of nature. Like we often talk about nature and the green leaves and the petals on the flowers and the air and the breeze and rain and all of that stuff, but we forget that part of nature, that part that hurts, the sting of a wasp, right? That's all part of it. It all goes together. And my sport, ultra running, not only does it put you in the elements of the physical elements of nature at large, but it reintroduces you to that exhaustion of what fighting for your life almost every day most likely was like, that can't be bad for you. It must be wonderful for you to bounce off of those feelings of scarce, very, bleak conditions or circumstances, to be able to bounce off of that. And 24 hours later, look back at it and go, wow, I made it through that. I am powerful. I am growing. I am learning. I'm living. So it's not just races to me. It's that. It's not just nature's beauty looking at it. It's that. It's the ugly part too. It's the painful part too. It's that you then carry with you into the world. Nobody has to know it. Nobody else can feel it, but you do. And you know, I've been through some shit. I'm powerful. I can feel my own agency. That, that is useful. That is useful. And it has been for me, for sure.
It's like my daughter did a series of survival camps, and very informal. No, I didn't sign any waivers or anything. There's nothing you could sign because you're going out in nature. But she finished and she knows I could live in the woods, like more or less indefinitely. She knows what to eat. She knows how to make shelter. She knows how to find clean water. Yeah. And it was like when she came back, she realized she was freer in our society than she had been before. Because, we've said the civilization is three meals away from, chaos.
Yeah.
Because we're all sucking at the teat of the industries that we think are required for our survival.
Sure.
Like, what if the supermarket runs out of electricity? What if the roads are cut off? Right, we're going to die.
Yeah.
And you know, the ability to first of all recognize that scarcity is natural and that we can survive it mm-hmm. for periods of time
mm-hmm.
gives you for, you know, the freedom to not be so worried about it. And it also gives you a feeling of gratitude.
Yes.
When you do have it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if you've never been hungry, it's really hard to be grateful for food.
Me and BJ, my wife, did a 10-day water fast. No, 7-day water fast. And we broke the 7-day water fast with some fresh-cut mango from Whole Foods. I almost cried. It was so delicious. And that experience there was like, oh, scarcity is very useful. Scarcity is beautiful. Scarcity is beautiful because it guards against, you know, taking things for granted, I think.
And this is something I got from the Radical Wholeness book, and I had, you know, was talking to him about it. That he says, like, the gratitude is the opposite of entitlement.
Hmm.
And, like, that really hit me because the way I used to eat, sort of everything in sight, it's got to be the way I want it, and it's got to be the most delicious.
Sure.
Like, I didn't like Hunt's ketchup. I only like Heinz.
Only Heinz.
Right? Like, stuff like that. Like, you know, having such high standards mm-hmm. of... And what it felt like was, like, if that's entitlement. Like, me just going and eating... you know, just to please my palate,
just as a sport, yeah,
as a sport, as a way to pass the time, as a way to hide all the yucky feelings.
Mm-hmm.
There was no gratitude about that food. It's hard to imagine sitting down with gratitude for the farmer, for the distributor, for mm-hmm. the shopkeeper, for the rain, for the wind, for the soil, and being a glutton. And binging. It just it feels like they don't...
They don't connect. Right. Yeah. Yeah. That's very powerful. And you can imagine the gratitude I feel for the food I eat. I don't know. Maybe you can't. But I was in a dark place in my life, man. I was in a very, very heavy place in my life. And I'm not talking about when I was 420 pounds. I'm really talking about when I was 320 pounds and I had lost 100 pounds and it looked very evident to me, imminent, that I was going to put the weight back on.
Because all of a sudden things were going really badly and
were going really badly. The food that I was using, I had gone low. I was doing low carb to lose that first 100 pounds. So then inside of low carb, you do all sorts. I still was able to misbehave with all of my ways, with all of the meats and the cheeses. And then you go, fried. As long as it's meat, it's fried. And then those low carb sort of rules get laxed. And when those got laxed and that environment, eating that way, that really stalled my weight loss. And I actually started to put some weight back on. And for me, when I started, we all know the story of how it came about with me and Scott Jurek and wanting to become a runner and all of that stuff. And so all of those things happened in my life to help me move my dietary pattern to a more plant-based diet. And for the first time in my life, after I did that, I felt like the weight was never coming back. You know, I felt freed. I felt simplified. I felt lighter. And so as time moved on, like, not only do I enjoy eating a plant-based diet, but I am very, very, very grateful for
how it has changed my life in a positive way. I never imagined the food I eat would make such a difference in my life. It's so hard to explain to people. It's very, very, it's very frustrating to not be able to thoroughly communicate that to someone. That, trust me, I am who you are, right? I was exactly that person. You have no idea. I can't explain to you how good it feels. I wish I could say something compelling enough to get people to really understand why I'm so grateful.
You know, and I've seen your gratitude. You know, I had the privilege of being with you when you met T. Colin Campbell and Caldwell Esselstyn.
Yes.
Like, I'm standing right next to you as you meet these guys, and I can see,
you
know, you're having trouble containing your heart and your chest for the gift they have given you.
Yeah. It's beautiful, and not just me, because you got to remember, Howie, the things I learned from those people, really helped us have an amazing last 3 or 4 years with my Bam Bam. It helped my mom have more capacity to deal with that situation as a live-in caretaker with him, because she was also on that same plant-based diet, and she was feeling more agency and capacity and losing weight as well. And Bam Bam was losing weight and leaving the hover around behind and walking more. And so it's not just about me having gratitude for the weight that has helped me lose, but I have gratitude for the extra years I know I'm going to have with the people I love very much, barring some crazy accident. We're not setting the table for sorrowful, chronically diseased endings to our life, you know. And that is powerful, because we were on a completely different trajectory for most of my life, and things are different now, and I am immensely grateful for that.
And it's funny, like, you wouldn't see, you know, a bullet point on the sales letter for some plant-based program or book, like, this will help you cope better with caretaking your demented parents.
Yeah, no, exactly.
Right? And yet, yeah, like, that's the messy stuff of life. Like, I mean, I know some of your stories.
Sure.
Like, there's nature coming back in.
Yeah.
I mean, in gross form, though, you know,
sure,
you can't talk about it in polite company necessarily.
Sure.
But it's like, oh, we've done all this stuff, nature's gonna win.
Yeah.
Like, the vines are gonna retake the city.
Yep.
And to be able to, you know, to be with a loved one as they, you know, we're all going to decompose somehow at some rate, but, you know, to have him on plants, to have him have vitality, you know, imagine like nature comes in and takes what is hers,
sure,
reclaims the matter, the organic matter, in a much more gentle, dignified way.
Agreed. Exactly. There's no doubt in my mind that if we hadn't helped Bam Bam shift over to the diet, to a plant-based diet, in the last 4 or 5 years of his life, I really doubt very seriously that he would have died peacefully in his own bed, in his own house at home. I think he would have died probably a lot sooner, and I think it would have been a lot more dramatic and a lot more tubes poking out of him and a lot more, you know, defibrillators and things of that nature. And so, yeah, yes, he ultimately died anyway. Of course, none of us are going to live forever. He spent a long period of his time completely, like, he was trying to destroy his body. We spent 4 years doing it the other way. So it's not like you can reverse everything, right? But we were able to keep him at home because he had lost 200 pounds, you know. We were able to keep him at home. We were able to get him off of a lot of his medications that he didn't need anymore. Get him out of his wheelchair. And really kind of shot ourselves in our own foot a little bit, because now he's so physically mobile. He might disappear on you, or he can punch you in the face when you're trying to give him a shower, or, you know, so those were some struggling moments. But ultimately, yeah, it was really cool to be able to kind of give him a little uptick there at the end.
And then we were talking at lunch about these two words, longevity, and you posited a different goal for human life, which is authenticity. As opposed to longevity. So yeah. Maybe we'll take us out by talking about that.
Yeah, so we get caught up in the numbers of just how many years we can live, like as if that's the end-all, be-all. And, you know, I mean, you can live to be 90 or 100 years old in the last 20 years of your life. You can be held up, you can be propped up by procedures and pharmaceuticals and live a terribly unhappy, low quality, inauthentic version of a human life. And I think it's a hell of a lot more admirable, or whatever you want to call it, to live for authenticity rather than quantity of years. You know, what sort of organism am I? What am I? Why did I get evolved onto this planet? What purpose do I serve? You know, and to be able to live that life, whether it means I die at 45 years old because I got hit by a Big Mac truck running down the road trying to get ready for an ultra marathon, or you know, get killed by a lion in the Comrades Marathon in South Africa, right? I would much rather be living in an authentic existence and be snapped from it due to some acute thing than to just barely keep death away while living with chronic disease for 10 or 15 years. So, and you might win. You might get to 90, and I might fall off of Mosquito Pass on my 60th birthday. Who cares? Who cares? You know, I think that's a lot more beautiful way to go than your 10th year of being a cardiovascular patient, and then, you know, you get pneumonia and die. Or something.
Yeah, there's a real difference between what's normal and what's authentic. Mm-hmm. So, you know, in order to figure out what's authentic, we can't look to other humans. Yeah. Really, we can't. I mean, there's some that we can.
Yeah, not the ones that are readily available to look at.
Right. I mean, this is about my last call back to Philip Shepherd. He said, like, when you look at nature, one of the things, like, everything in nature is in service.
Yeah.
And we think we, you know, human beings can be exempt from that. Like, everything has to be in service to me. The animals in the feedlot have to be in service to me. The fish in the sea have to be in service to me. The wind has to be in service to me. If, you know, I'll be green and go, you know, wind power and solar power. Everything has to be in service to me, but I'm in service to nothing but myself. And I think there's ways in which when we move towards this life, it would hurt too much to not be of service.
Right.
It'd be like damming something up. It'd be like this, you know, we'd just explode with good, you know, we couldn't. We have to pass it on in order to not stagnate.
Yeah. Yeah. And I've never thought of that in my life. I'm just, until listening to Rich Roll, he talked an awful lot about being of service. And it made so much sense to me. And it felt so right. It felt like such a groove. It was something that I had really watched my grandmother do my whole life. As I look back, you know, she would help constantly, always wanting to, even if it meant she had to hide it from my grandpa because Bam Bam wouldn't think it was a good idea. Right? She was always ready to give. always ready to be of service. And that feels right. She was a very religious lady. And I'm not a religious man at all, but I do feel just as spiritual and passionate about being of service to others as my grandmother did. There's no doubt.
Yeah, you know, for me, one way of being of service is to try to embed myself in virtuous cycles.
Sure.
So, like, just, you know, it doesn't seem like much, but just saying no to our industrial food system as much as I can.
Yes.
Feel like, mm-hmm. You want to save animals? First thing you can do is stop eating them.
But, yeah.
Our friend in South Africa, Zimbabwe, Damien Mander.
Oh yeah,
he's like, you know, he's like a sniper who protects endangered species. It's the first thing you could do to want to save animals is stop eating them.
Stop putting them in your mouth. That's exactly right.
Right. So there's lots of ways to be of service by just allying ourselves with nature process,
yes,
rather than human profit driven process.
Yes. Yeah. It's a cleaner way to live. Yes, you'll be a little dirtier, a little more bruised. Your nipples may bleed from time to time. You might have more scabs on your body, but God damn, is it more fun and fulfilling and magnetizes you, draws you to the right people to be around. It's wonderful. I'm just, you know, happy to be where I've accidentally wound up. Yeah. Very grateful.
All right. Well, I'm grateful to have you here. It's a beautiful time of year, and it's awesome to walk the garden paths and share it and see it through your eyes too.
Well, thank you very much for having me. It's a treat. The hospitality has been amazing, and had a wonderful night's sleep. Looking forward to coming back and visiting and doing some more of this stuff, man. You've become a very, you know, I remember listening to you on Rich Roll's podcast. And I remember reading Hole. And it's just really neat to think that you have become not only a very good friend, but a mentor and somebody that I look up to in a big way. So I'm very grateful for you as a human being, as a person, and all of your family as well. So thank you.
Well, and thank you. I was already doing plants, but thank you for the gift of running.
Yeah.
Because it was a missing piece. So,
good. I'm glad I could help.
You and your family mentored me as well. I had your mom and your brother on the podcast three weeks ago.
Yeah.
And I'm enriched by all of you.
They're awesome. So appreciate it, buddy.
All right. Let's turn this thing off.
All right.
All right, let's hear it for Josh. Let's hear it for nature. Let's hear it for face-to-face conversations. I love podcasting via phone and Skype. I really love sitting down with people in person. You might have caught the conversation last week with Emma Passé, where I drove out to Charlotte with the portable rig. And this episode in which Josh comes to me, it's really nice to have a human connection. I guess it has something to do with nature, right? So these phone and Skype calls, while they are some kind of connection, there's an artificiality to it as well, whereas being in the presence of another organic human body, where you get all sorts of signals that the brain doesn't necessarily process digitally, I think leads to deeper conversation. So here's to all of us, to getting out of our offices, to getting away from our screens and having real conversations, real interactions with other human bodies and not just human voices and digitized images. So if you enjoyed this episode of the Plant Yourself podcast and you would like to support the mission of the show, the absolute easiest thing you can do is subscribe and leave a review on Apple Podcasts. And if you want to do more than that, a quick reminder that this show is free for everyone and it's supported by those who can afford to. And I'm still the principal person who is supporting this show. You may have noticed that there is zero advertising. It's just me doing my thing. Obviously, there's lots of benefits that accrue to me from doing this show, from learning a ton to making all sorts of great connections to building some degree of influence in the world. But in terms of financial rewards, this is still mostly an output rather than an input. I'm getting close to about $700 a month in Patreon patronage, which if you tripled that, would pay for my time and the hard expenses of running this show as well. So if you'd like to participate in supporting and underwriting this mission, you get a couple of things if you do that on Patreon. You can just go to patreon.com and search for Plant Yourself, or you can go to the Plant Yourself website, and on the right sidebar, there's a Patreon button. The biggest bribe is you get access to all of my healthy habit huddles, and at every level, you get access to those, even if it's just a dollar a month. Second thing you get is, if you like, I will say your name very rapidly as part of the thanks at the end of every show. You can listen for that as well, and imagine me saying, you know, your name here at the very end. And the third thing you get is that feeling of knowing that you are contributing. It's the feeling I get, the warm fuzzy I get every single time I post a new episode or hear feedback from someone whose life has been improved by the show. And if you haven't experienced it, I invite you to try it out. So you can just go to Patreon and become a supporter and help this show spread its wings and help even out the burden on me, and we can make this a whole community effort. So in garden news, the theme of this week is Attack of the Killer Zucchinis. I mean, seriously, these are Little League baseball bats, because we went away, Mia and I went away to the American College of Lifestyle Medicine corporate roundtable for 4 days, and no one was there to defend the garden from ever-growing zucchini. And so I would say we must have a good 60 pounds on our kitchen counter right now. If you live near me, drop me a line and we can get you some. The blueberries are also coming in about, I would say, 2 pounds a day right now. So if that continues for another couple of weeks, we'll be all set through the winter for and into the spring for our frozen blueberries. And other things that are growing, of course, the basil and the tomatoes are beginning to give a hint that they may turn red and become delicious as well. In running news, no running this week, just walking. Although I did, when I was walking on the beach at ACLM, I was passed by Dr. Veggie, Ted Barnett of Rochester Lifestyle Medicine Institute, and I couldn't help myself. I turned around and ran with him for a couple of miles. So I wasn't completely run free, but I'm still working on healing the heel, healing that right heel of plantar fasciitis. All right, so thanks. Thanks to Will Ridenour for allowing me to use Sabali Dawn, The Dance of Peace, as the theme music for this show. You can find out more about Will and listen to more of his music at willridenour.com. That's R-I-D-E-N-O-U-R, willridenour.com. And of course, thanks to all of you Plant Yourself podcast patrons. Here we go. Kim Harrison, Lynn McClellan, Anthony Disson, Brittany Porter, Dominic Marrow, Barbara Whitney, Tammy Black, Amy Good, Amanda Hatherley, Mary Jane Wheeler, Ellen Kennelly, Melissa Cobb, Rachel Behrens, Christine Nielsen, Tina Scharf, Tina Ahern, Jan Volkanovsky, David Bizek, Mysterious Michelle X, Elspeth Felden, Victoria Dolomanova, Leah Stoller, Alan Christensen, Colleen Peck, Michelle Landry, Josina, Julianne Rollins, Stu Dolnick, Sarah Durkis, Rhymes of Circus, Kelly Cameron, Wayne Pedersen, Leanne Peterson, Janet Selby, Claire Adams, Tom Franchek, Danette Bedham, Gil Lassert, David Donahue, Blair Cyber, Dorona Vizov, Gio and Carolyn Argentati, Jody Friesner, Ruth N. Funderburk, Misha Rosen, Michael Warabek, the equally mysterious Tracy Z, Alicia Lemus, Rebecca Hughes, Val Linneman, Rhymes with Cinnamon, Nicker Harper, Stephanie Holmes, Martha Bergner, Nicole Ramsey, Susan Ahmad, Molly Levine, The Inscrutable, Harry R., Susan Laverty, The Panda Vegan, Craig Kovic, Adam Sharp, Karen Burry, Heather Morglin, Ashley Corcoran, Kelly Machia, Deanne Norton, Bonnie Lynch of Plant Happy Oregon. Sabina Kurtzels, Nigel Davies, Marion Blum, Teresa Koppel, Shell Rublet, Julian Watkins, Reed O'Connell, Brian Sheridan, Shannon Hirschman, Kate Rolls, Linda Ayat, Julie Lang, Holm Hedegaard, Isa Tuzinwa, Connie Hainline, Aaron Greer, Alicia Davis, Aviva Lael, Heather O'Connor, Carolyn Jensen, Sherry Orlikowski of Plant Power for Health, Karen Smith, Scott Mirani, Karen Joe Crabtree, Tanya Lewis, Kirby Burton, Teresa Carell, Kevin McCauley, Elizabeth Rothschild, Kelly Baker, Miracle, Aunt Jessie, Cheryl Dwyer, Jenny Hazelton, Valerie Peltier, Peter W. Evans. Colleen Harrison, Justine Divitt, Joshua Sommermeyer, Dennis Bird, Darby Kelly, Lori Fanny, Linnea Lundquist, Valerie Hummel, Deb Casilla, Emily Iaconelli, Levy Wallach, Rosamund McAtee, Dan Picorni, Stephen Leenan, Patty DiMartino, Mike and Donna Kartz, Deanne Bishop, Bilberry Elf, Gunter Schmidt, Marjorie Lewis, Kelly Molden, Trisha Adams, Ian Kramer, Nancy Sheldon, Lindsay Bashore, Gunmarie Hagen, Tracy Gullidge, Laura Heaton, Meg from Mama Says, Rochelle Kennedy, Joan Borstein, and Diana Goldman. And your name here? For your generous support of the podcast. That's it for this week. As always, be well, my friends.